You are listening to 97.3 LPFM WRIR, and this is Open Source RVA. On today's Open Source RVA, we'll have a frank discussion about water rates, accountability, and sustainability with Richmond activist Scott Berger, and we'll tell you how Tea Party politics is affecting education in Hanover County. But first, here are some of the top stories making headlines right now.
For Open Source RVA, I'm Amy Daniel, and here's the news. A historic first for Virginia was cemented this past Tuesday, the 15th, as the openly gay Tracy Thorne Begland was officially confirmed in this post as a Manchester General District Judge by the Virginia General Assembly. Thorne Begland was nominated to fill a vacancy at the 13th General District Court last year, but though he had been certified in the committee process and enjoyed bipartisan support, late-hour protests from social conservatives derailed a full-term appointment for the father and former Navy pilot. Some asserted that Thorne Begland would have a bias toward homosexuals in his judgments and that his 1996 coming out on the national news during his Navy career, well before the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, was an inauspicious defiance of his military duties. After the General Assembly voted against Thorne Begland this past May, June saw the judges of Richmond Circuit Court still appointing him to serve on the bench for an interim period, and this year's General Assembly validation of his appointment will have Thorne Begland continuing to serve for at least six more years. Thus far, members of the General Assembly have not held back any openly straight potential judges for fear of a possible bias towards heterosexuals. It hasn't made the news lately, but some members of the community say they're still concerned about the kids at A.V. Norrell Elementary School. Norrell currently houses one of Richmond Public Schools' early childhood education programs, for which purpose it was reopened last school year despite objections of some parents, civic leaders, and other concerned citizens. A local activist organization that opposed Norrell's reopening, Parents for Life, is planning a flashlight vigil on the school grounds this upcoming Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day at 6 p.m., and plan to attend Tuesday's meeting of the newly formed Richmond School Board to let just-elected board members know they are still not satisfied. A.V. Norrell was built on a dump in the 1950s and has since been trailed by allegations ranging from environmental racism, the presence of methane gas and other waste-related toxins from the dump itself and later area flooding, and rushed and some say non-transparent handling of these community worries. For more on A.V. Norrell and to view decades of city, state, and federal documents related to Norrell and ongoing public health concern over the years, visit the archives at rvaopensource.com. Tomorrow night, take a time machine trip back to the days of hot jazz, flappers, and streamlined modern design. The Art Deco Society of Virginia presents its first Jazz Age Preservation Ball. Slated for the Boiling Hacksaw House at 211 East Franklin Street, the Roaring Twenties-styled gala will raise funds for the historic Byrd Theater Foundation and will feature live music by the John Wynn Jazz All-Stars and a performance by the Garter Snaps, a dancing flapper duo. Charleston lessons will also be offered, and they are will be a live and a silent auction as well. For more information, go to artdecova.org. Broadcast of WRIR is made possible in part by VCU Arts, a nationally ranked program featuring 16 visual, design, and performing arts departments and a campus in Qatar. arts.vcu.edu.
Most people, when confronted with the conservative inertia and the backroom political maneuverings of Richmond, give up after a while. This place will never change, they say. But don't tell that to Scott Berger. Since he arrived here in 1992, Berger has been a consistent and often highly effective critic of the way we do things here in River City. And unlike many city critics, he does his research. Berger's influence has never been more pronounced than in the past year, when he, as the co-chair of the Sierra Club Falls of the James Group, launched a full-scale propaganda war against the city's highest-in-the-nation water service fees that saw a well-publicized protest at City Hall. As past president of the Oregon Hill Neighborhood Association, his campaign against VCU's encroachment of Oregon Hill often took on the form of a crusade. And in his position as a local Green Party activist, he often argues strenuously that we need a different kind of politics around here if we really want change. While he's been a thorn in the side of everyone from Center Stage Foundation to Venture Richmond to former city councilman Marty Jewell, Berger doesn't just toss arrows. He's also advocated for progressive change, talking about Wi-Fi and sustainability years before it was fashionable. We are pleased to have Scott Berger join us today. Welcome, Scott.
Wow, thank you.
We've known each other a long time, but I don't think I know your backstory very well. You're originally from Norfolk.
This is true. I was born in St. Louis, but raised and grew up in Norfolk.
Where'd you go to school? I'm just curious, as a Hampton Roads
resident. Grew up in Norfolk. I went to school at Norfolk Academy.
Oh, okay. And you got your degree in political science?
Yes, from Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut.
So you were always interested in politics?
I believe so.
Yeah. Did you ever want to become a politician yourself, run for office?
I've considered it from time to time, but I find it more effective sometimes to be on the outside.
Oh, okay. Well, when you first came here, were you politically active, or was it something that kind of progressed over time?
When I first came here, I was most interested in the music scene here, mm-hmm. and that's part of the reason why I came here. And I didn't think I would stay, but then I fell under the Richmond curse, and I have stayed.
Right. Okay. Well, before we get into some specifics, give me your general feeling about where the city is now and where the city is going. Are we making any strides, or have we made any strides in the past few years?
I think we've made some strides. I think it's been slow, but there has been progress, and I would point to things such as the city having a sustainability department. I would point to some of the deeper discussions we've had about how to bring back downtown and mm-hmm. develop the riverfront. I would certainly take a look at the music and art scene and say that we've made some strides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Richmond's transparency and openness has been something that you've talked about a long time. We had C. Wayne Taylor up here a couple months ago talking about the open government petition that you worked with him on. The Virginia Freedom of Information Advisory Council recently gave Richmond a C rating on its accountability. Talk a little bit about that and why that's important. Richmond's not known for being such an open place.
Right, and I do think that's something else to I think activists are finally, like C. Wayne Taylor, are finally making a difference. The open government's been a real issue from the start, I think, for anyone who's been in Richmond. This has always been a place where you sort of had a lot of decision-making coming from above and not always a lot of good discussion or debate before the decision comes out. And so, I think this campaign is particularly important because it touches on so many others, from the schools to the water rates to development issues, you name it. I think the open government issue really stands above as something that mm-hmm. matters probably the most.
Right. What would be some of the steps that the city of Richmond could take to address some of these concerns as far as, being more transparent and accountable?
Well, You gave me a lot of praises at the beginning there, and I would certainly say it's more about people around me like Silver Persinger and C. Wayne mm-hmm. Taylor mm-hmm. and Charles Poole. A lot of my friends and neighbors who've including yourself, who've brought this along. But in terms of where we're going, I do think that we need to look elsewhere. Richmond tends to be a lot of very insular in some ways, and we always talk about being the capital city, but we need to look elsewhere and see what other cities are doing. Not just in this state, but also in this country and the world. I think what the petition is asking is that Richmond bring up its open government standards to at least be equal, if not better, than surrounding Virginia cities.
Mm-hmm. And you can get the petition. It's still active, ready to be signed at replenishrichmond.com?
Right. Rick Tatnell, who's also a local activist, mm-hmm. That's his project, and he sort of helped convene some of us together to get the petition going. And we're talking about expanding that effort, and now we're looking towards creating a group about better government.
That would also include openness and transparency.
Right, of course. Right. And you know, honestly, it goes back to putting citizens at the center of things.
You talked a little bit about downtown and the arts. You haven't always been supportive of some of the initiatives that have happened downtown.
No.
Particularly the convention center and center stage. And
you know, honestly, a lot of my politics goes back to what I see as really a long drawn out power struggle between citizens and this artificial construct called the corporation. And what we see a lot downtown is corporate welfare in the name of more tourism, mm-hmm. in the names of the arts, in the name of all sorts of other things that really, in the end, aren't helping most Richmond citizens.
Right.
And I see a lot of money that's been wasted downtown in terms of some of the development. Now, that's not to say that I disagree with all of it either. I mean, I believe in some of the Sierra Club's past efforts as far as restore the core, mm-hmm. but how we do it is, I think, just as important as, you know, what we're doing.
Well, you've been really effective recently. The Sierra Club, Falls of the James Group, has been really effective in bringing to light the water service fees. You challenged many of the members of the media, including Open Source RVA, to find a higher fee anywhere in the United States, and we couldn't find it. Talk about why that's important that we fix that or that we address that.
That has some deep roots also. That goes back many years to actually some of my Oregon Hill neighbors who brought to my attention some of the surcharges that are appearing on the utility bill. Back then, I think there was a 5-cent surcharge on the gas utility, and there was questions about where that money was going into the general fund and what that was happening. That's back when I think Kane was council president and Jameson was city manager. And mm-hmm. I spoke for city council, and Jameson quietly, and council finally got rid of that. But then, you know, a couple years later, and again, neighbors bringing my attention to the fact that even though they're not using any water, they're being charged this huge fee. Mm-hmm. And what we're finding is that Richmond has, as you said, the highest service fee in the country, monthly service fee, residential fee. And it matters because, you know, after further digging, we're finding that the city's actually making money off of this yeah. fee. And it's basically off the poorest of citizens on a basic necessity, which is mm-hmm. water. Mm-hmm. It also speaks very much to the conservation mission of the Sierra Club, because if you were paying a base rate, high base rate for this much water, you tend not to pay attention to how much water you're using. Mm-hmm. And I know in the previous years, there actually has been a discount for the higher volume users, the corporations
yeah.
who and other entities who've been using
and
so
are,
much
and
water.
And are we selling it to the counties at a lower rate?
The city will say is they're selling it at a wholesale rate. And the problem, of course, comes in when you have Richmonders paying a minimum of $40, $49 a month, and then you have Henrico residents paying $15 a month. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, it's understandable that the city owns this water utility, and it's understandable that they want to sell water to the counties. But the fact that our own citizens are getting charged so much while the counties buy water from us and then charge their citizens for less is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, you've criticized the use of historic tax credits, and most people think that that's just a win-win. But you have a little different view.
Well, I it's more nuanced, I think. Again, from my experience with my Oregon Hill neighbors, we've seen where some big-name local developers have used historic tax credits fraudulently, mm-hmm. and to the point where we're getting the FBI involved. And when Goldman and Allen brought forth the idea of trying to get historic tax credits for schools. Hey, I'm all for it. I mean, we have some of the most beautiful schools mm-hmm. in the country, and the state of Virginia has probably the oldest schools in the country, and Richmond has the oldest schools in the state of Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I look at Grace Arendt School up in High in my own neighborhood, Oregon Hill, as a perfect example of a school that could benefit from historic tax credits. But I do worry about the possibility of fraud, and we have seen past examples of that with certainly French and others.
Mm-hmm. Justin French.
Yes. And the other aspect of that is, you know, if we're going to consider having historic tax credits for schools, why don't we consider having green building tax credits as well? Mm-hmm. You know, try to put that aspect in there also.
It's surprising to me that that hasn't been proposed, because that's happened in other cities.
Right. Right.
What's your opinion on why we can't get it done here? Is it just a?
I think there's a lot of pushback from the development community. I think there's a lot of people who are still trying to get their handle on sustainability. I actually served on the city's Green Building Advisory Commission or whatever it was called, Advisory Committee, a couple years ago. And honestly, you know, we had some back and forth with some other people, developers on the and VCU on that committee. But honestly, what it came down to was our goal was to simply get something in the code. Mm-hmm. And we did that. The right. City Council passed a green building.
So it can happen.
It can happen. And what my advice to the James River Green Building Council and other people who are now serving on those on the RVA Green Commission or whatever it's called for the city, keep pushing it. Keep trying to get that in the code because we got the door open. Mm-hmm. Push it wide open and get that stuff in there.
Right. Talk a little bit about the city council, the shakeup on council and also the school board. Do you think that this bodes well for Richmond? We had Parker Agelasto up here a couple weeks ago, and he seemed like he was willing to tackle some issues that maybe other council people had shied away from.
Yeah, I'm particularly heartened by Agelasto's win because I think it's really was substance over style, flash, and I think you know, Parker brings some experience and some real considerations to what deliberations to what's going on with what council's dealing with. I think, you know, honestly, I look at city politics and it's easy to get frustrated because, you know, there's still so much of the old racial stuff in there. There's mm-hmm. still a lot of jockeying back and forth between smaller groups such as the Chamber of Commerce and Crusade for Voters and the Richmond Democratic mm-hmm. Committee. Mm-hmm. But what it comes down to is getting better politicians in power and right. people and people who will respond to citizens.
Mm-hmm. Speak a little bit about your role as the president of the Oregon Hill Neighborhood Association. You were very critical of what Virginia Commonwealth University was doing. Give people who weren't maybe attuned to that situation, give us an overview of what was going on there.
Well, it's kind of frustrating for me because honestly, that wasn't what I was hoping for my term as president of the neighborhood
right.
association.
You didn't want to be concentrating just on that, but you were. I mean,
it was a constant thing for many years. You know, and you know, I remember when I became president and I went to VCU and I said, look, the neighborhood is changing and we want to, you know, work with VCU. And next thing I know, they're proposing to build take one of our historic buildings and build a rec center, a student rec center out of it. And not only that, but take part of a historic alley and change the street grid. And mm-hmm. it just, at that point, in addition to all the burgeoning student population, we were really overwhelmed by the mm-hmm. amount of student renters, or still are, in the neighborhood. And a lot of other neighborhoods are also now. And so, you know, it came to really revealing what this was doing to the neighborhood and also revealing some of the modus operandi behind everything. I mean, you have to remember, Trani was president of VCU. He was also president of the Richmond Renaissance. He controlled a lot of the – he was probably number one power broker in the city. I mean, Style recognized that. And,
he could basically do what he wanted.
A lot of times, yeah. And it came down to, you know, if you look at things like parking. You know, we hear a lot about parking now mm-hmm. and traffic congestion. I said, you know – 10 years ago, I said, look, you know, if we're still arguing about parking 10 years from now, it's because Trani didn't act to partner with the city to put in proper mass transit. And mm-hmm. here we are.
Right.
You know, and so those issues haven't gone away. Hopefully VCU has learned its lesson in that, enough people recognize that VCU is acting as a bully and, you know, basically misrepresenting itself, mm-hmm. acting dishonorably.
Right.
I think enough scandals have come out of VCU to the point now where I think they realize they needed a clean house, and hopefully they're getting better. Though I'm hearing some other disturbing things, and we'll see. But you know, again, I look back at the history of Oregon Hill, and of course, Oregon Hill used to be a lot bigger than it is now. And I think about people like Jenkins, you know, who fought against VCU back in the 70s and 80s. And, mm-hmm. and it wasn't my plan to continue that, but that's what's happened. I hope that Richmond will learn from these these things that have happened in the past, and hopefully, you know, VCU with the new council and the mayor will come to an understanding of, mm-hmm. you know, protecting the inner city neighborhoods at the same time continuing VCU's mission. I'm not anti-student, but at the same time, I do.
Well,
think
you did criticize. Well, for instance, your view of the noise ordinance was interesting. You kind of supported it.
I do support it. I think it's the right thing. I'm also, as I said before, you know, into music, and I don't want to see the music scene hurt, but I do think that if you look at what's happening, we need the noise ordinance when it happened, and I appreciate
particularly for those areas.
Particularly for those areas, I went to a 5th District citizens meeting this past week, and I didn't prompt her, but some woman from Randolph stood up and she went on a 20-minute tirade about the student noise. So it's still an issue. You know, how it's driving out generations of her family, and she's thinking about moving out of the city.
Right, but because politicians couldn't craft a coherent noise ordinance, we basically have one now that means nothing. It's almost unenforceable. Even the mayor has admitted that. So again, it comes down to good governance.
Sure, and I think that's the sort of thing that's going to have to get worked on some more. Mm-hmm. But we're not the only city doing that. I mean, honestly, you look around the country and you look at places in Texas like Austin, and they're dealing with the same sort of matters.
Yeah. But they actually brought stakeholders into the process to try to craft a plan, which we didn't do. We sort of just got the usual suspects together, got the police together, and said, okay, that's who we need to talk to.
I think. Well, yes and no. I mean, I do think that there was a musicians union there, but you're right in terms of having more. I'm in favor of having more stakeholders at the table. I think one issue that's related to this that's going to come up soon is busking in terms mm-hmm. of street performances. Mm-hmm. I think that eventually, you know, I'm not necessarily in favor of bigger government, but I do think that the city government is going to have to get a handle on this situation, mm-hmm. and they're going to have to look at places like Norfolk that have recently come up with licenses for street performers.
Right.
You know, these are the sort of issues where hopefully there's people from the street performance community who will step in and say, hey, you know,
talk to us too.
Yeah, I want to be part of this issue. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens.
You've like me, you've criticized the city's high meals tax and how it was raised, and also the city's admissions tax. As a longtime critic of the Performing Arts Center deal, what is your response to this idea that the Center Stage Foundation is a Tier 1 organization, which the Firehouse Theater Board of Directors recently postulated?
Well,
does it make your blood boil?
Yeah, and there's a point where I have to sort of just, okay, they're going to do what they're going to do. But I do think that the citizens, I told the mayor this when he was running. I told city council members this when they were running as candidates. Keep looking at Center Stage, mm-hmm. because at some point this house of cards is going to fold.
Right. Because it's basically built on historic tax credits. And
honestly, we still don't know how much city money is going into that. And it worries me that they are now, you know, having their tentacles go into the landmark. Mm-hmm. And I mean, look, I'm not against old theaters being renovated, but the economic sustainability of what's going on is very questionable.
Mm-hmm. It's also a question of priorities.
Right. I'm an arts person, but I don't think that necessarily the city government should be in the theater business.
Right.
And I do, and again,
neither
people keep pointing to,
you know, conservative business people maybe shouldn't be in the arts business either.
The problem we get into, again, goes back to my point about citizens versus corporations. And a lot of these people who have forwarded things like Center Stage and the Redskins deal, they're not citizens acting for what's better for the long-term good of Richmond. They're acting for short-term profit. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it's more about real estate control than it is about the arts.
Right, right. Well, you are, you know, if you know Scott's voice, you may be an original WIRIR listener, because you were an original DJ up here at WRIR.
I was the original DJ when we were down in the basement.
That's right. Oh, we're not supposed to talk about that.
We're not?
How do you think we're doing up here at WRIR? You've been away for a little while, and you've had a chance to look at it.
Well, I want to be, I don't want to come off as you know, Mr. always Mr. Critic. I mean, I'm very thankful. Mm-hmm. I'm humbled. I'm appreciative of what's gone on, in terms of not just WRIR, but I look at Throttle Magazine going on to become, you know, and now being inherited to some extent by RVA Magazine. Mm-hmm. You know, other you know, grassroots media stuff happening, and I find it very positive, and I'm very happy to see what's going on in the local scene. You know, went last night to Strange Matter, which used to be Twisters, which used to be something else, and saw this giant Afro pop show, and that was amazing. Mm-hmm, So, you know, I think great things are happening. And in terms of WRIR, I'm really glad to see the diversity of music and all that, and the talk presented. I do think there's more that could be done. I do think that when the Virginia Center for Public Press got hold of the Low Power FM license, it shouldn't just be about radio. There's so many other things, mm-hmm. aspects to being a community resource in terms of trying out Wi-Fi, you know, trying to be more of a beacon for.
Speak to that, because you were one of the original. You were speaking about Wi-Fi a lot earlier than most people. Talk about the importance of that.
Well, it's something that's happening all over the place nationally is the digital divide. And certainly we still have that here in Richmond, where a lot of poor people aren't exposed to the internet. The only way they get exposed to it is either if they're in public school or go to the public library. And there's a lot to be said for creating more community resources, maybe even Muni Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we seem to be more of a Verizon town or what have you. And I don't see that changing anytime soon, but this is the sort of thing where, you know, if something small starts, it can roll into something great. And I do think, you know, these are the sort of things that I really hope. My plea is that people take more chances. People try more things. I would love to see solar on the roof here at the studio.
Solar?
Yeah. We could be the first low power, not only the first low power FM urban station, but also first solar powered urban station on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. There's lots to be said for creating more sustainable, but also more resilient media and institutions.
Well, I'm Don Harrison, and I've been talking today with activist Scott Berger. Thanks for coming on Open Source RVA, Scott.
My pleasure.
WRIR's programming is generously supported by the Richmond office of the law firm of Kaufman & Knowles. Kaufman & Knowles, Richmond lawyers serving the needs of Richmond business. For further information, 804-771-5715 or www.kaufmanandknowles.com.
In the world of real estate, few things are more important to home values than the quality of a community's school system. For more than a decade, schools have helped define Hanover County as one of the Richmond metro area's most valuable real estate markets. The collapse of the nation's housing market in 2008, coupled with the emergence in Hanover of a strong and organized wing of the Tea Party, put increasing strain on schools in recent years. The county's Tea Party split airtime on its trademark yellow plywood billboards, attacking the president and blasting wasteful spending in this county's school system. Remarkably, those attacks were on a district that long prided itself on achieving some of the highest test scores in the state while maintaining the lowest per pupil spending in the state. In 2010, the Tea Party at last won the opportunity to convert words to actions. They won 3 new seats on the county's Board of Supervisors. The shift was personified by Wayne Hazzard, who defeated Republican Board Chairman John Gordon. Even as a plummeting housing market eroded the tax base, the county lowered its property tax rate to 81 cents per $100. The school system, bent and creaking under the strain, took its lumps. Until 2 weeks ago, faced with another $5-plus million in cuts, teachers, then parents, and then students erupted when school leaders confirmed long-simmering rumors of a planned switch at the high schools to what is called a 6-of-8 schedule. That planned schedule would increase the number of classes teachers are teaching, and in effect would mean a 20% increase in teacher workload. For high school teachers, it was the final straw, and what happened next was fast and furious. As the Board of Supervisors began holding their already planned public meetings with their constituents, the first of those 2 meetings, usually sparsely attended, drew about 50 people. The second, at Mechanicsville Library, was standing room only, and the room was hot. Teachers and parents voiced concerns not only about erosion in the classroom, but also of how that erosion might well spread, further straining property values should Hanover lose its vaunted place as the region's educational trendsetter. Toward the end of the meeting, as Canova Peterson, who represents Mechanicsville District, asked whether people would support a tax increase, the answer was an overwhelming and resounding yes. In the interest of full disclosure, from 1997 to 2000, I reported on schools for the Hanover Herald Progress. My wife continues to teach computer science there. I'm with Linda Terry. She's the president of the Richmond Association of Realtors. She's also a licensed broker and an auctioneer and works both in Virginia and North Carolina. Ms. Terry, thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Can you tell me, I guess you've been doing this for how long?
About 22 years.
So you've been around the block a couple of times, so to speak.
I would say.
You're very well aware of the correlation between home values and schools.
Yes. There's no question that the public, when they are ready to make a purchase decision, schools will be one of the very first things that they will look at, assuming they have a family or plan to have a family.
Now, is there any data or statistics on that you're familiar with?
Not that I am aware of, other than website hits and questionnaires that prospects respond to. They rank schools within and associated to given neighborhoods as definitely one of the deciding factors that they look at in choosing where to live.
But anecdotally, we can see it. And in fact, actually, we're not going to talk specifics, but just to give one specific, I guess, when you look at Northside, Henrico, and then walk right across the line into Hanover, the housing prices, it's night and day. Hanover County in the Atlee area is a much higher value area than Henrico County Northside in, say, Chamberlain area.
Correct.
And much of that has to do with the perceived value of the school system.
I think that's probably very accurate.
So there, I'm assuming, though, too, is a balance. I mean, with tax rates, you probably want, as a locality, to somehow balance what you're doing in terms of taxing your citizens and giving them a value, I guess, for their money as well, right?
Yes, and certainly not only that, but communicating that and making sure that the residents are comfortable that their taxes are going to those services that they feel are very important, and schools would be very high on that list.
Is property tax, is that something that's typically a consideration, the tax rate for people who are prospective buyers? In other words, when I'm looking in the Richmond area, do I look at Richmond City and see a dollar and change, and then look in Henrico and see, what are they at, 90-some cents right now, and say I'm going to Henrico because of the tax rate?
Well, that certainly is a distinction and a difference, and I think it's probably a realtor's job to educate a consumer on what some of those differences represent, such as there may include trash pickup, leaf pickup, and other amenities in the city that taxes in the counties may not include. So it's important to make sure that apples to apples are being compared.
Now you're 20 plus years in the industry, and again, you've seen quite a bit come and go probably in terms of localities raising and lowering taxes to try and balance this what is probably a fairly complex rubric. When you look at, let's say, historically going way back, Richmond had what was at one point 50 some years ago, it was a top-notch school system. And as property values declined for a variety of reasons, you saw people disinvesting in that locality. The school system has since declined. And now one of the big things that they're working on is to improve their school system for the purpose of bringing their property values back up, in addition to simply getting people to move back in. Are there any, I guess, recent examples of localities that have seen a significant rise or a significant decrease in their quality of life, I suppose, based on school system that went up or down?
Well, in terms of Richmond, because you mentioned Richmond, I would not say that it has to do necessarily with their school system as a whole, but Richmond has seen an increase in residents overall. The demographics have changed, but for the most part, what the statistics are showing is that the individuals who are moving back into the city of Richmond are more likely single professionals that do not yet have families.
Or active lifestyle seniors, I guess, is a lot of what you're seeing as well.
That is also a demographic, yes, empty nesters, correct.
Right. So can you think of any localities that you've seen in recent years where you've seen a change in the school system that's affected the overall valuation by the aggregate, I guess, as they're looking for a home?
I haven't seen solid statistics, but I would hazard a guess that you mentioned Northern Henrico. There is a new high school there on Staples Mill Road in Henrico County, mm-hmm. and I feel fairly certain that those neighborhoods that are close to that school will see a benefit from that school coming online.
Okay, so maybe we'll get to watch that in coming months or in coming years. Again, Linda Terry, you're the president of the Richmond Association of Realtors. You're a broker and an auctioneer. Thank you for joining us today. It was very good talking with you.
You're so welcome. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night.
I'm now with Chris Pace, a longtime social studies and varsity golf coach at Hanover High School. He's also worked, I believe, at Lee Davis. And he's been an IB teacher. He's taught everything from GED to AP classes. He's also significantly the son of Jay Pace, the longtime editor and publisher of the Hanover Herald Progress, of which I'm an alumni. Chris Pace is now following his father's editorial path to some extent with the founding of the friendsofhanoverschools.com. It's a site that in a week has gotten more than 7,000 hits around this topic. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Chris, thanks for having me. It's good to see you.
Nice to see you again, too. It's been a very, very long time.
It had too long.
So can you tell me, I guess, first off, what are you upset about?
I'm a product of Hanover County Public Schools. I've worked in Hanover County Public Schools for 19 years. We're the best school system in the state of Virginia, and we don't ask our taxpayers to spend a ton of money to get that product. However, the last 5 years, well, the fifth year, I think, we're in the budget season right now for the fifth year. But the last 4 years, we've sustained budget cuts that have taken us all the way down to our bare core of services, go ahead.
Well, now, hasn't every school district?
True, tough times, undoubtedly. But see,
what makes Hanover different?
Okay, let's look at Henrico, for example. Henrico right now is talking about 10% served meals tax, and if they don't get a 9-0 vote as they negotiate with the governor on that, then they're talking about bumping property taxes 6 cents. Hanover, I don't know. We'll see what happens in Hanover. Of course, you know, we're our board's very conservative. I don't think that they're. I think a lot of their, I think a lot of what they feel is out there is that they don't want to see a tax increase. I mean, nobody really wants to have their taxes raised. But when you're talking about cutting, when you're talking about making people pay to play a varsity sport, okay, when you're talking about cutting a middle school sports program altogether, where the total cost in a $177 million budget is $300,000, that's a drop in the bucket. And it's not really, you know what I'm saying? That those are programs where, I mean, those kids are in a uniform or on a practice field doing something positive instead of sitting at home playing a video game or getting into God knows what. And those programs, that's $300,000 well spent, if you ask me. No, but that's where, you know, when we're talking about cutting those things, it's pretty clear. And not to mention reduction of the workforce by 330 positions in the last 5 years, and we're a small system.
And they're talking about further reductions, or
yeah, 294 is the number for the last 4 years, and then the number we heard at the town. Yeah, there's two town hall style meetings in Hanover, well attended to, by the way. I think that's another thing that's
and
different
we're
in Hanover
get to
now.
Those. We'll be getting.
Yeah,
to
we
those
have a lot
a
going on with those. But the number we heard the other night was 330 full time employees. And you know, it when basically the way I'm here more this organization. I mean, I'm a teacher.
Now, real quick, let's back up a little bit. So, what's happened so far is, again, to review, you have had a board of supervisors that's seen some significant turnover in the past 5 years. The county, which has long been considered to be one of the places to be in the Richmond metro area, some of the highest home values, which also means that it got hit pretty hard during the recession and the housing collapse, but some of the highest home values, some of the most sought after homes, and the school system has long been sort of a crown jewel. Again, that school system has some of the highest test scores across the board for all of its schools. It's been remarkably good at being consistent, regardless of where you are in the county, and it has really some pretty innovative programs. It has IB at all of its high schools rather than having specialty schools that are special for just a couple of kids. And then we've seen, again, with the problem with the economy, at the same time you've seen the county cutting taxes.
Yeah, from in 2007 we were at 86 cents on the 100, and now we're down to 81. I'm not sure exactly when that number happened, but another statistic that we've had that we put on our website, it's actually today's fact of the day, Chris, is that Hanover's local tax revenue for schools has dropped almost $11 million, an 11.2% decrease, and at the same time, the state's not giving us any money either. That drop is $12.8 million, a 14% decrease. So that's fiscal year 08-09 through now, and it's just we've reached a point where I think we may have reached it actually last year.
Well,
sizes are now starting to bust at the seams, and you know I'm in this as a father,
Chris.
Not though, as
what's
a teacher.
What's fascinating about this whole story, I think, is that what you've seen is really most taxpayers have been on board with what's been going on with the Board of Supervisors lowering tax rates, trying to invest in home construction by doing things like removing proffers, and really hadn't seen much in the way of an objection. In fact, people have seemed relatively happy with it until this budget process with schools.
I think, it may be one of the people that I've been working with is a science teacher named Dan Bartels, and he has put something together that's kind of like, he's with us, but he also kind of wants to do his own thing to some extent. He knows a lot of people. He's the founder of our robotics program in Hanover. And one of the things on his, that he's trying to get out there is, you know, wake up Hanover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's time to look at the numbers, look at the cuts, look at the lost jobs, look at everything, and realize that, you know, when we're talking about cutting extracurriculars and starting to charge fees, like all IB and AP you mentioned, those are the stalwart programs of what produce future college students, and even Patrick Herring sent a couple kids to Yale recently.
Are those programs?
I mean, I taught IB. IB is out by far, like, because IB is a soup to nuts thing. You take
but
IB
are those
everything.
Programs threatened?
I think they absolutely are, because here's the other thing too: is you know when you teachers haven't seen a pay increase, and we're not advocating for that, by the way. The money's not out there. We recognize that times are tough, but what we are saying is you have to fund the school system. You have to be able to give teachers the time they need to run these programs.
Now, what was it that pushed you guys over the edge, and what is it that has gotten also parents showing up for you in support of what you're saying?
I think the number one thing is probably the fact that, yeah, again, I'm here as a father, not as a teacher. I think some of my colleagues are looking at other options. And I'm not talking about you know, just anybody. I'm talking about the people that direct our IB programs, the people who are...
And when you say other options, you mean leave the district.
Leave the district, get another job. You know, they're just... when what we have to do... Basically, every year is budget cuts, okay? We got to do a little bit more. You know, the headline that McCansell Local yesterday said, Hanover Schools doing more with less, which is a complimentary, I guess, to some extent, but at the same time, it also, you know, you could also call it kind of low rent. And we're not filling the hole. And I understand, okay, again, times are tough. The first few years, the budget cutting, I get it, okay? Assessments are dropping, property values are dropping, the economy had been tanking. Economy's starting to rebound a little bit, and I'm telling you, this year is the year that after 5 years in a row of cuts, a lot of teachers are saying, I got a lot of skills. I'm a really smart person. Like, think about it. If you understand physics, right, at the AP level, you could go make a lot of money.
Physicist?
Yeah, exactly. Or if you want to be an actuary, okay? Let's say you understand mathematics at a high level, all right? You want to go be an actuary. Maybe that's not nearly as fun as interacting with kids and seeing them
grow
and prosper.
So what you're talking about here is you're talking about a brain drain.
I'm not yet. And that's why I'm fighting. And I'm fighting as a father and not as a teacher. I mean, I could do the same thing. I have some skills. I have a skill set I could throw out there and get a different job if I was interested in money. I'm paying my mortgage. I'm not complaining about that. I want resources in my classroom. I want a textbook that's not copyright 2002 in my classroom or some technology. You know, and people can argue textbooks or iPads, whatever. I get that. But I got to have one or the other. And the textbook one of our facts is textbook funds have been used, $3 million plus have been used to fill these holes, and so we got what we got.
So
and
in other words, that
some of my
that
teacher friends who are telling me the textbooks are obsolete. The math SOLs have been changed more recently than we've bought books.
So in other words, the 2002 number that you threw out there is an actual year. The last time that you did textbook adoptions in
social studies, yeah. Even worse is. You know, science, okay? Because science never changes, right?
Right.
I mean, I think one of Time magazine, I can't remember the name of the lady, but one of Time magazine's people of the year was a particle person. And, you know, that stuff is brand new. And so I guarantee you what's in the science textbooks is obsolete.
That.
And again, my science teacher friends tell me, and I use the book every once in a while. A lot of that stuff is out of date and it just doesn't work. So, and there's the other thing too. This is, I think, an important point to drive home. I talked to Amy Gordon, one of our great math teachers at Hanover High School, and she said, Chris, you know, and she and I both started in 1994, Lee Davis. And she said, Chris, in 1994, it was 1994, and we had a box of transparencies and handouts and things. But we walked in the door with a box of resources and a textbook that had been purchased in the past few years, okay? And now we're going to hand some young kid coming out of Longwood or JMU in a teacher prep program at age 23, we're going to hand him keys to a classroom and a book from 2002 and say, pat him on the back and say good luck. And that's not good enough, Chris. It's not good enough, and that's why I'm here.
You guys already, you don't pay quite as well as Henrico anymore. It used to be that you guys were comparable to the other localities. Your level of pay has fallen off some, too, as well.
I think some of us are worried about pay. I mean, I'm paying my bills. I'm happy to have a job, to be honest with you, because the economy is rebounding to some extent, but it hasn't been that great.
What kind of parent support are you getting with this?
I think parents, you know, like you said, you talk to realtors, you talk to parents. If the best and brightest staff are going to leave because of the carnage they've seen the past 4 years, we will no longer be the top school system in the Richmond metro area. And I think we're there. I think this is a crucial moment, Chris. I really do. I think this is like the fifth year of cuts. If we can maybe get a bond referendum, a tax increase. I mean, I'm not on the board of supervisors. I'm a concerned father. And we need money for our schools, period. And some people have asked me, well, where do you want to spend it? I think saving staff is a good way to do that. But at the same time, I'm not an expert, Chris. I'm an expert in social studies and how to instruct it. The board and the school board need to work together the way they used to in the past and get together and figure out a way to fund the schools appropriately so that we have the resources we need to teach our kids and so that we have, we retain the best staff in the Richmond metro area, because we have the best school system anywhere, but we got to put some money into it, or people are going to start jumping ship.
Now, before we go, because we're running out of time,
okay.
But before we go, you've had now these two town hall meetings, and presumably there are a number of others. These were the supervisors, individual supervisors, having town hall meetings around the budget. These are usually, I've been to them, there's seven people there who are a little cranky about something having to do with the paving in front of their house or something. My understanding is that these have been incredibly well attended. Can you tell me a little bit about what the tone and tenor of these are?
The key is parents being on board.
Well,
for
who's
us.
There?
Absolutely.
How many people are there?
I'd say, well, we were at Chickahominy Middle School on Monday night, and I'd say there were between maybe 45, 50 people there. I was on the mic for Hanover High School basketball on Tuesday night, but the Friends of Hanover Schools was there in large force. One of our
founding
partners, right, Dr. Michelle Schmidt, spoke on our behalf that night, as well as some other staff at Hanover High School. Tom Connolly was there.
Do you know how many people were at this meeting?
It was Mechanicsville Library and the standing room only. We had the cafeteria at Chickahominy, so it looked a little sparse, but there may have been 50 people there. I think there were 60 people at the Mechanicsville Library, and that place was busting at the seams. And again, the common thread, one other point I haven't made yet is, or that I think you have made with your prior interview, I mean, good schools sell homes, period. And people, the economy's been tough, so the last thing we need to do is gut the school system, have the best people leave, and then find our homes decreased in value by 10-15% more. I think that hits every taxpayer, whether they're, an empty nester, a young family getting ready to try and have some kids, and or people like myself who are already in the school system. I think those things are all on the minds of everybody. And the biggest thing too is the impact on students. That's what it's about. It's about the kids, and I guess that's why I'm here.
But as much as anything, though, it sounds like you're worrying about a downward spiral where you basically get into a set pattern where bad schools lead to lowered home values, lead to worse schools, lead to lower home values, and then you're Amelia eventually.
I mean, like I said, I think this is a critical moment. I think if we fill the budget hole this year, we can get out of this thing. Or if we can at least just stop reducing staff. Because the bottom line is this, you look at those 330 jobs, that's 330 people that aren't helping our children, and the school system has like 20-some schools in it, so... That's a big chunk of the workforce. I mean, that's a big issue for sure.
All right, Chris Pace, whose father I used to work with at the Hanover Herald Progress. He's a teacher at Hanover High School, and he is, I guess, the founder of the friendsofhanoverschools.com website, which is
one of the four,
which has seen 7,000 hits in just about a week as people are, I guess, latching on to the idea that maybe cuts in Hanover have gone a little bit more than what they're comfortable with. Thank you again.
Hit the website, folks. Thank you for having me, Chris.
And that's our show for Friday, January 18th, 2013. I'm Don Harrison, and my co-hosts are Chris Dovey and Amy Daniel. Our producers are Jay Westerman and Gabby Schatzi. Our key grip is Mike McKenzie, and our board op is Mr. Mystery. Hey, what's wrong with yous? You haven't yet surfed our tricked-out new open-source webpage at rvaopensource.com. That's where you'll find breaking local news, editorials, and links to our podcasts. Come on, get with it! Until next week, thanks for listening to this edition of WRIR's weekly audio news digest, Open Source RVA.